Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name's Mike Calvin. I'm joined by David Walker of the Daily Mirror and tactical analyst Adrian Clark. Most clubs are in meltdown this week. The transfer deadline does that to people. But the chaos is especially acute at Arsenal. We all know the reasons why. A stubborn manager, frustrated, feckless players, an owner whose only interest is in the bottom line. The point is, David, what's Arsene Wenger going to do about it?
Well, in the end, he'll lose his job one way or the other. He'll either walk away and realise he probably made a bad decision signing the New Deal last summer, or, and I can't believe the Arsenal board and the way they are so compliant with Wenger are going to sack him, but I think it will lead to the parting of the ways eventually. The tragedy is that Arsene Wenger is such a smart football man and is a great student of the game, so he must be aware that the likes of, and in no particular order, Alex Ferguson, Bill Shankly, Bob Paisley, Kenny Dalglish twice, all walked away, in some cases retired from those clubs. And guess what? They left their teams as major trophy winners. And I've got to say, that was a wonderful opportunity Arsene had last summer at Wembley with the FA Cup to say, there you go, there's a trophy on the sideboard, I'll go now. And he should have gone in the summer. And now we're seeing the consequence of that call.
He's a proud man. Principled man. Is he the type to walk away?
I don't think so. No, I think he's married to football, isn't he? I think he wouldn't know what to do with himself if he wasn't in charge of Arsenal. I think he's just got to look at the picture, try and clear his head over the international break and work out what this Arsenal side needs to be successful this season. We are only three matches into it. Three tactically poor performances, it has to be said. I think tactically, at the moment, the Gunners are in a bad place. So he has to think about, right, what do I need to do to get the most out of these players? And for me, it's quite clear that the challenge is work on what they do without the ball. You look at all of the big six, apart from Arsenal, and they will have a way of playing. They either press feverishly or they sit back and keep a really structured shape. You can't say that about Arsenal, unfortunately. They're very easy to play against. If he focuses on that very hard and brings out all these coaching skills, all the things he's learned over the years, then Arsenal can turn it around. That is part of the battle. There are other challenges, of course, in terms of the players' mentalities. But from that side of things, Arsenal must improve big time without the ball.
We've looked at, things are moving really quickly. We've got, here we are Tuesday morning already. We've heard that Manchester City have made another bid for Sanchez, this time including Raheem Sterling. If that goes through, who gets the best of that deal?
Oh, Manchester City, without a doubt. I mean, the issue, and Arsene Wenger and Arsenal as a club know this, is Sanchez is their best player and they're in danger of losing him, be it now or next summer. Now, the only thing that surprises me in all this is that's a script we've all known for many, many months and they, as employers, have to deal with it. You know, and I have no issue with Arsene Wenger. This is my point, really, to start off with on the Wenger and where he is in his own personal crossroads. He's had a fantastic career. He's done an awful lot of great work. The body of work he's done, and in years to come, we should look back and say what an outstanding manager he was. My point is, it's not three games that Arsenal have been in decline. This has been long-term. You've seen this coming season after season with issues not being addressed and recruitment issues not being addressed.
It's decisive,
and contract
it's
issues.
Indecision. I think Arsenal need more decisiveness at all levels. I think the manager if he looks back at what how he's dealt with this squad, he will surely realise that he should have been a bit more ruthless. He's given players too many opportunities. I think at board level, they'll maybe look at it and think, could we have been more decisive in the transfer market? Looking at this bigger picture about players out of contract, should we have come up with a clear plan on what we do? Whether it's a trade-off, maybe we don't know what talks have been held, but if Alexis Sanchez is destined for Manchester City, I would like to have seen Arsenal work very hard on what kind of trade-off they can do. Not one that suits City, e.g. Luke giving them Raheem Sterling, who's becoming a fringe player. Who do Arsenal want out of that deal? Sergio Aguero would be the obvious one. For me, on that trade, Raheem Sterling replaces Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. You still have a mammoth Alexis Sanchez hole to fill, because this is a guy that scored over 20 goals last season, provided over 10 assists. Unfortunately, players like that do not grow on trees. But, and if Arsenal let him go, they would be considerably
weakened. Well, they're going to lose him, Adrian, aren't they? That's the fact now. You're left with, so what have you done, or they done, with respect to you, what have they done to replace Sanchez in the long run? And I'll give you a great example. This was singing the other day. Kevin Keegan, European Footballer of the Year, the star man at a Liverpool team that won the European Cup for the first time and wanted to come play abroad and went to SV Hamburg. What do Liverpool do? It's exactly the same scenario as where Arsenal are now. Now, just bear with me on this. Yeah. They go and get Kenny Dalglish down. People say, oh, you'll never get Dalglish out of Scotland. They did, and the team got better. You look at the David Beckham departure from Manchester United. Yeah, things have been sour, but he was part of that class of 90, a hugely popular player. The summer that Beckham leaves the building, Cristiano Ronaldo arrives. Now, I can see a plan. What I don't see with Arsene Wenger too often is the plan of what he's going to do with these star names.
And it does all beg the question, if you're a player of Sterling's pretensions, needs to be playing regularly in a World Cup year, he left Liverpool to join a top team. He's obviously being ushered towards the door. Why would any top player go to Arsenal in their current state?
Well, if you base it on the first, you know, on the last two defeats and performances, there will be question marks in prospective targets' minds. How successful are Arsenal going to be this season? I fully understand that. But look, Arsenal is a great club. It's in London. It's a big draw for players. And they will come again. But they need to make changes to come again. And changes, not necessarily always in regards to the staff, just in changes in attitude and changes in approach. I do feel that to this season they talked about change, didn't they? A catalyst for change.
Nothing's happened.
I do feel that really they should have been very, very active and made a huge statement this summer in terms of spending power. That way, it appeases the fans, or, you know, in an instant to some degree. It also makes players like Alexis Sanchez and Ozil feel like the club and the team are going places. I think they have made a mistake by sitting on their hands to some degree. And now we're just, you know, right towards the close of the window, talking about Raheem Sterling, a player that's not on Arsenal's wanted list at all. It all feels too last minute. And unfortunately, we have seen this before. So I completely understand the frustrations.
And can I just say one other thing on that, though? On the other thing, on the recruitment issue, there is definitely a split in the camp there, in the sense that some of the American people involved with Stan Kroenke and his son Josh would prefer a more statistical, analytical base to it, whereas Arsene has always backed his scouting network in terms of what they see with their own eyes and what they're... And down the years, they have come up with names that Arsene has been virtually ready to go and then has pulled out at the last minute.
But you've got to judge on basics, human basics. You look at Mesut Ozil. There's an unhappy guy. He's not producing. Doesn't really want to be there. You can see that. So why keep him? Just get rid.
Well, you need a buyer.
True.
So there may be a reason as well. And there's another player who can let his contract run down for a year and walk away and make even more money next year.
Yeah, I think by... I'm not saying get rid of Mesut Ozil, I think, but by being ruthless, I used that word earlier, decisive, I think sometimes you have to send a message to a dressing room. Actually, are you good enough to play for us? We're Arsenal. Are you guys good enough to be here? And I think that's how the staff should be flipping it around at the moment, getting really tough with these guys. And I would like to have seen that a little bit sooner this summer, because Arsenal is a great club and a lot of the players at the moment are not producing performances worthy of being there. And Arsenal need to send that message to the players to say, look, you are on trial here. It's not just about whether you want to be here. You are on trial. We will bring in better players than you if you don't deliver. And I think that has to be the message moving forward.
Yeah, it looks like Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain's going to Chelsea. Where does he fit in there?
Well, unless he turns up at Liverpool, Mike, who may still have a little run at that, and there are suggestions that if he could now, there is a belief that the clubs, Arsenal and Liverpool, after the famous Luis Suarez debacle and, you know, the belief they could poach him for the £40 million and a pound, that Arsenal would prefer to do business with Chelsea, so maybe he will end up at Chelsea. I think, and, you know, this is where you're left with, you put 30-odd players out on loan, you've got some young English players going around the Premier League, and yet you want to go and sign another one. Oxlade-Chamberlain is a very good Premier League player. I'm not going to go higher than that, but I think he is very good. And he also, for a lot of the teams that are looking at the UEFA requirements in the number of domestic players who've been developed, would meet those criteria.
Yeah. I asked him last season, I spoke to him, and I said, well, where do you want to play? And he straight away, didn't hesitate, he said centre midfield. He won't play at central midfield for Chelsea. It's not going to happen. He won't play, not when they've got the guys they've got, Conte, Bakayoko, Fabregas. He'll be wing-back, because I think he can be a better wing-back than Victor Moses. At Liverpool, in a three-man midfield, he would, in my opinion, get into that side. So I could see, if Arsenal are prepared to do a deal with Liverpool, I could see Alex himself looking at that. Because I do think he's thinking not about money, he's thinking about his future and where he wants to play. I wonder whether he would be leaning towards that.
Would you be surprised if, as it seems very likely, that Mustafi goes as well? I can't work that one out.
I must admit, it's caught me completely off guard, this one. And I don't think he's been a huge success. It was it felt like a strange signing at the time. He started off okay, but has never really shone. In my opinion, he would probably be on the fringe of the first team. So it wouldn't be the shock of the century if they sold him, but having already let Gabriel go, they need two centre-backs and they need to upgrade in quality. I'm astonished, really, that they haven't gone harder for Virgil van Dijk. What with the way that Liverpool appeared to mess up that deal. Virgil van Dijk is tailor-made for Arsenal in the middle of a back three, or he can play in a back two. He is the type of physical player and natural leader that can also play football, bring it out from the back. He would be the perfect fit, and I'm really surprised they haven't speculated on him.
But that issue, van Dijk's great example, that's the exact logic in it, and it is it's a sort of simple logic, you can see it, that is astonishing Arsenal fans now with Arsene Wenger, in that cornerstone parts of your team, that getting the centre-back sorted out, getting your midfield home. And, you know, if ever a club had the examples of that in the modern era, it's been Arsenal who built it. It were a wonderful trophy-winning team based around those principles. And yet Arsene Wenger does not appear to adhere to things that have been laid down inside his own club. I mean, it's crazy, really, isn't it?
Yeah, one of the frustrations for me when I've looked at the team this season is what's going on in the centre of midfield with Ramsey and Xhaka. Two very good players, very good footballers. But Aaron is bombing on at will, leaving Granit Xhaka on his own. But then Granit himself is also being lured forward at the wrong times. And in every game so far, there have been gigantic holes in the midfield. And what I don't understand is why that's been allowed to continue for a whole half and a whole game and then be repeated in the next game.
So there was a really telling moment in that Liverpool game where there were, I think it was six Arsenal players caught in front of the ball in a very quick counter-attack. And they were just jogging back. Now, that tells me that something fundamental is wrong.
The only other side in the top end of the Premier League that would perhaps be guilty of that, Manchester City. Every other manager, every other club at that top end, it focuses very hard on what they do without the ball. And it's the obvious weakness in that side. Sort that out, because Arsenal would always score goals. And they've had two blanks in the last couple of games. That's an anomaly. They will always score goals. They've got to get back to clean sheet mentalities. And that's the place to start after the international break.
You know, modern football is now moving so fast that we're having the sort of conversation we normally have in about November. And we've got to now look at the potential of managers getting sacked even this earlier in the season. Slaven Bilic saw David Sullivan, has been basically told, you've got four games. Mm. How can he work when he seems to be being undermined from within on a continual basis?
Well, I think the way, and I think David Sullivan and David Gold claim they've addressed the issue over leaks and things being placed in social media. You know, time will tell if that is correct. I think it's very difficult for Slaven Bilic. I've got to say, Matt, I don't think it's so much you've got four games, it's let's play these four games after the international break and we'll look again. Let's just see. And obviously, they've not played a home game yet. I think...
Well,
absolutely. Well, they've got a stadium that they're renting and they've made great play of how much they're making out of that and what a great deal it was. So now you pay the price of not staging home games and having to play catch-up. But I think there's a West Ham situation with Slaven Bilic, some of which, again, isn't just this season. Some of it is a carryover, the hangover from last season and things going wrong and have they been addressed. I think the other one where we're seeing where Frank de Boer has been put under pressure and hauled in by Steve Parrish yesterday and, you know, having review meetings after three games, which have been appalling, it's got to be said.
Yeah. Well, I was at Palace on Saturday, and what got me was, you've got an obvious Sam Allardyce team trying to conform to the principles of Johan Cruyff, which is never going to work. But it was the lack of ability to actually respond to different demands. They're professional footballers.
Yeah.
Aid, you've been one. Mm. Surely they could have made a better fist of it than they have.
Well, yeah, it's been an abject start for Crystal Palace. What I will say in their defence is that when you're a professional player and you've got a manager that says, right, in this scenario, I want you to clip the ball up the line to centre forward, central midfield, join in, whatever. You've got a certain game plan, a way of playing. When you've been used to that for a couple of years, then when somebody else comes in and says, right, we're not doing that anymore, this is what I want from you, it can take time. Forget pre-season friendlies, they don't count. They're never competitive. It's not the same. It does take a little bit of time. But yeah, the signs are worrying. I did think as soon as they appointed Frank de Boer that it was a misfit choice for Crystal Palace because I just don't see them becoming the new Swansea. I think they've got a long, long way to go before they can play that brand of football and be a top half side in the Premier League. Swansea played that way through the leagues, didn't they? Mm-hmm. It was ingrained in them. To have such a dramatic change like that overnight, I think this was completely to be expected. If they fire him now, it's an admission that they completely got their appointment
wrong. But surely it's better to do so after three games than 13 games, because you've got more chance of repairing the damage.
You don't know what's going to happen in the next 10, Mike. That's a, you
well,
know,
I haven't seen one Saturday. Yeah. I've got a fair idea.
I agree. The only thing I would say is I feel a great degree of sympathy for Frank de Boer, if, as we're led to believe, the Crystal Palace hierarchy made the conscious decision, we want to change what we're serving up for the fans. We want to give them a different style of football. This is the appointment that can do it. OK, well, if you really wanted to do that, it wouldn't have mattered who had gone in. You might have had this problem. Mm. You stick with him. I think you're right. I think because of the whole scenario of protecting Premier League status, potential investment in the club going forward, all the bits that have got a commercial thing, that's why Frank de Boer will get sacked. And you're right, probably sooner than 13 games.
Do you give any credence to the stories that have just popped up that Sam Allardyce might go back there?
I wouldn't dismiss it. I've got to say that I'm intrigued by Sam, the football man, if people are sort of petitioning him to return, whether he could resist it. The only thing is, in terms of his family, and I don't mean this, his health, in the sense of I am not aware of any health problem, but I wonder in terms of almost like the sanity and what he's going through.
I saw him the other day, and he was on really good form. I think he'd just been to Hawaii. He was loving it.
I
asked him. I said, how are you finding retirement? Loving it, absolutely loving it. And he looked healthy. He was speaking very, very freely. I don't think he's in any hurry.
But can I just say, Matt, that is the exact scenario. Sam reached the point, that personal crossroads, when he goes, do you know what, fellas, I've had enough. All those great managers I mentioned earlier had the same thing. And in Dalglish's case, it was the strain, the pressure at Liverpool. Mm. He walked out of Liverpool, you know, they were champions. They were 3 points top of the league when Kenny went. So you could argue, stick around, but he walked. Now, that's the issue I've got with Wenger now. If you're so smart, Arsene, why didn't you see the script that you... It's a nightmare he's walking into.
Mm. We talked about Liverpool, you know, with Dalglish there. Philippe Coutinho.
Yeah.
You know, we're in the summer of sagas, and this is one of the principal sagas. Liverpool are obviously clearing the decks. Naby Keita. They're going to spend more this week. Do you think he'll go?
Do I think... I think they should sell him, actually. Yeah, I think the price is a pretty fair one. Providing Barcelona structured the deal a bit better, I was reading reports that of this headline 130 million euros or pounds, only about 80 million of it was up front and the rest was not guaranteed. It was at various clauses. Mm. If they change the structure of it and come up with more up front, then I think Liverpool should sell because they've proven already so far this season. I don't necessarily rely on him for creativity. They've got plenty of goals in the side. And in Coutinho's shoes, who could blame him for wanting to join Barcelona? I think he would improve their midfield three. I would see him playing a deeper role at the Nou Camp, especially now that they've signed Dembele. Yeah. I think he would improve what is quite a tiring Barcelona central midfield. So, no, I think that deal works for all parties, to be perfectly honest.
I don't think they'll sell him out this time. Mm. I think Liverpool, but, I think Klopp...
Well, it's like they're going to throw a lot of money
absolutely
around.
No, point of principle. Are they doing
I think Liverpool have a blueprint and it's worked before for them. Mm. What they did with Luis Suarez, saying, stick around, you've got... Because he's not gone into the last year of his contract where you know he's going to walk away for nothing. So you've got him as a player, you want to make the point that this club is not going to just bow because of a player star name, and they've done it before. Mm. So I think you'll see Coutinho will leave eventually. Liverpool may well know the end game could be next summer, but I think the points will be proven, and then all this money they're investing, particularly with players going to be arriving next year, you'll suddenly see what's funding it.
On that, Keita's coming 1st of July next year. Basically, Liverpool are committed... Even if he gets injured seriously in the Bundesliga this year, you know, not wishing that on anyone, but there is a risk involved in that transfer, isn't
there? But I think the price reflects that a little bit because I think if they were to buy him right away, he might cost a little bit more. He's a good player, really good player to watch, but he's only really delivered over the course of one season, one fabulous season in the Bundesliga. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see how he fares, whether he takes his eye off the ball over there in Germany. But no, I think they've got a player there for a good price and he will improve them in 12 months' time. It is fascinating to what they do over Coutinho. It really is. It's also the message they send out to the players. And I know you sign a contract, you're expected to honour it, but, you know, if Coutinho is rubbish... If he was diabolical, Liverpool would be forcing him out, selling him to Bournemouth, even if he didn't want to go there. So it works both ways. And if they want to attract these superstar players or potential superstars, if Liverpool suddenly have a reputation for holding their best talents to ransom, preventing them to go into the likes of Barcelona and Real Madrid...
But they're not doing that, Adrian. What they're doing is saying... The key is the player gets the contract, signs it, you deal with it, if you're putting it from the club's commercial point of view, you sell Coutinho when his market value's high. Mm. What you don't do is what Arsenal keep doing and let people... And it goes back to the Patrick Vieira days. I mean, we're talking about sagas. How many summers did we have? Mm. Is he staying? Is he going? Where's he going to go? Oh, he's now signed a new deal. Mm. There's a thing ingrained in that. Now, Liverpool have been quite smart in recent years to go... We found out nobody wanted Coutinho. When Brendan Rodgers...
Isn't this peak value,
though? Hang on. When Brendan Rodgers took him... He was unwanted around Europe, so he got a nugget of gold. It's been burnished. He's blossomed there. It's been a great club for him. And they're going to say, yeah, you want to go to Barcelona, but the timing's got to be right for us as a club. Mm. Why should anybody just roll over, oh, Barcelona are calling? Mm.
But they are showing signs of clearing the decks. Divock Origi, there's seven or eight clubs after him now. Also, you know, in the UK, Tottenham, Crystal Palace, Newcastle. Do you expect him to be sold by the deadline?
Yeah, they've got quite a lot of strikers. I mean, Firmino is so underrated, isn't he? I think he's a quality centre forward. It does look like is Sturridge going to stay? I mean, there was talk of him going. He was a misfit in terms of the style of Klopp, but there's no talk of Daniel Sturridge leaving. No. Actually, I think Origi's very rough around the edges, but I think there's a player in there. If he does leave, I think he could bounce back. I wouldn't be surprised to see him bounce back.
I think the Daniel Sturridge thing, the biggest single factor, and nobody can deny it, is his injury record and the club's concern about the repetitive nature of some of those injuries, which causes you a problem about, are we going to have him out on the field enough? Now, if he's going through a period where he's, you know, I'm fit, I'm feeling good, there is a definite player in there, you're right, you know. Mm. But look, there's a classic where they've assembled, they changed the manager, they've got a very energetic younger guy gone in there, and what a job he is doing. It's not, everything hasn't worked out overnight, but you can see the progress that Jurgen Klopp has made there. My issue going back to the Arsenal thing is 2 years ago, it was more than 2 years ago, you could see this decline and fall, that what could happen. And if you look at the managers that Arsenal have missed...
Stop sending it back to Arsenal,
no,
David.
No, because I'm saluting Jurgen Klopp. Well, tell you what, Arsenal as a fit, you'd say, if Arsenal had gone for, in no particular order, Pochettino out of Southampton, Ancelotti when he's been available in there, Klopp when he's out of work having left Borussia, and there's loads of people. Well, yeah. Do you know what a good appointment
that would have been? How many trophies has Klopp won at Liverpool?
Well, he's not yet, but you can see the work he's doing.
When did Arsenal last win a trophy?
Well, yeah, they won the FA Cup, but look how many...
Look who they beat to win it.
Yeah, but look...
Man City and Chelsea.
Yeah, but look... OK, so hang on, stop. So you think everything in the Arsenal game and Arsene Wenger's a long-term future?
We've covered that, no.
No, you're not. If you believe Arsene Wenger's a long-term future, you should declare... Clear it now.
Well, what's one last word on Wenger, and it's to do with Mbappe.
Yeah, yeah.
I saw a piece by Gab Marcotti this week where he talked about 18 months ago, Wenger going to the family and the family saying, yeah, he can come to Arsenal, but we need 7 or 8 million euros in compensation.
Okay.
And he said no. Wow. That's why I think he's worth persevering with, because we haven't got too many men of principle in football, have we?
No, I agree with that. But I can think of other commercial deals where Arsenal have got parents and people working as scouts for them to help them sign players.
Allegedly.
Yeah. Mm.
OK, what about the transfer window as a whole? Mm-hmm. You know, we're in sort of prime ducking and diving territory this week. Mm-hmm. Is it a bad thing for football?
What, having a transfer window? Mm. I must admit, I quite liked it in the old days when you were able to sign players all year round. There was a deadline, wasn't there? A cut-off in March time. I preferred it like that, to be perfectly honest, because, I don't like working from window to window. I do agree with the managers that say it should be sorted before the start of the season. It's very unsettling for the team.
There has to be a uniform thing across Europe.
There has to be, yeah. I just think just move it forward to August the 1st. I don't think many leagues start before August the 1st. So I don't see why they can't do that. There's still plenty of time. Open the window earlier. I know, when does it start at the moment? July the 1st.
July.
Obviously, just bring that forward to June the 1st to August the 1st. That's fine. But yeah, if they were to scrap transfer windows altogether, I wouldn't be against it. I also feel maybe you should have one in November time rather than January. I think, just shifting the calendar around might work quite nicely. So go June to August the 1st, and then again maybe November to December, then we're done. Mm-hmm. Until then you've got a whole long time for the coaches to work with their players. It's really unsettling. I don't like it.
Is it out of control? Because, we talked about financial fair play. Well, that's just a myth, isn't it? You know,
totally.
If you look at what Mbappe's doing, they're now going to take him on loan for a year and then give them 166 million next year.
One of football's great secretaries in terms of rule-making within the game, who's now retired, but one of the really smart guys, I flagged someone up to him and said, this isn't fair, it's not right, you can do this. And he went, David, you know what? If we introduce another rule, within 3 months, clubs will have found a way around it. Mm-hmm. So the more red tape you start introducing around transfers, registrations, clubs always find a way to beat it. Mm-hmm. Hence the Platini, I will crack down on financial fair play, you watch, we'll set a new blueprint, clubs will not be able to... And you look at all the sponsorship money that's complying in and how PSG can actually go and fund the Neymar deal. And you just go, that's that idea got blown out of the water. Mm. The one that really gets to me, and I know this was one of the founding principles of the Premier League, and I still believe they got it right then, there should be no loan deals in the Premier League. That should just be... So if you're a Premier League club and you want to send a player out into the Football League or abroad, That's fine to get experience, but this issue of Premier League players being loaned around, that was absolutely outlawed at the start. That was one of the agreements. We will not have loans in the Premier League because you back. So if we're going to have transfer deadlines in the sense of there's a window, then you've got that squad to work with, and you've got a squad with your own young players. You've got to give games to.
Yeah, we saw. Yeah, there was a story, wasn't there, earlier in the week with Diego Costa maybe going to Everton. I don't think that's going to happen, but. But again, it would, in a way, it'd work for Chelsea because he would play against all of their main rivals except them.
Sounds like you'd have to lose about half a stone.
He might have to, but yeah, he would. Costa's not finished. He'll be back somewhere.
Mm. We're in Levy time, Daniel Levy time, right?
No, not quite.
Not quite. Well, yeah, we've got probably another day, haven't we? Spurs have let Kevin Vimmer go to Stoke today for 18 million.
Sensible move.
Yeah. 42 million for Da Vinci. Yeah. Sanchez, which seems a lot, but he's got promise, obviously.
Yeah, look, I can't sit here and say I've watched him every week.
What stroke is Levy going to pull by Thursday night?
Well, he needs bodies, I think. I do think Spurs are short on numbers to challenge in the Champions League and the Premier League. The bench is still relatively weak. Davinson Sanchez, I haven't seen him every week, so I can't really tell. But what I saw of him in the two Europa League games, the semi-final and the final, I wasn't at all impressed. I thought he had shockers in both games against Lyon away and then in the final against United. His positioning was alarmingly bad. But he's athletic and he makes up for it. He's one of those centre-backs that can make up for it. Very confident on the ball. So I'm not sure about him. But, yeah, no, they need a striker, don't they, to compete with Harry Kane, to apply a bit of pressure. And they just need to fill that bench with better quality players. They need full-backs as well, because if Rose isn't going to stay, I don't think Ben Davis is the answer long-term. And I don't think Trippier is the answer long-term on the right either. So they do miss Walker and Rose quite badly.
Yeah, well, lots going on today with Serge Aurier, isn't it? Whether he'll get his
absolutely
permit.
I think the other thing with Tottenham will be, and this is Daniel's way as well, you'll watch, there'll be some exits. People who had been deemed surplus, I think you're right, I think one of their priorities this week, and it could be a left-field signing, will be a new centre-forward. And I think you'll see Vincent Janssen will probably go back to Holland on loan because he's not delivered as the understudy at the weekend. He can't even get on when they're chasing a game in the dying seconds. You know, you think, do you throw him on? No, we'll do someone else. So I think Janssen, who apparently is training and looking really good with the Dutch thing when the pressure's off him, you know, he's whacking, everything goes in the net when he's in that situation and may well get a game against France on Thursday. I think you could see some of the fringe people like that, Daniel, say, OK, well, let's shift them and maybe have to buy big on a couple of the signings.
Mm-hmm. Looking at the season as a whole, Adrian, I'll try and identify a couple of players who will have standout seasons.
OK, yeah.
At the moment, it looks to me, Sadio Mane at Liverpool is an absolute godsend to that team.
Contender, isn't he, for Footballer of the Year? His curve is certainly still on an upward climb. He's the real deal. I remember his debut, actually, for Southampton against Arsenal in a League Cup tie. I commentated on it and I thought, look, this kid looks useful. And he's just continued to get better and better. And Salah, I think, is looking good. He's not got as much craft to his game, but he's very dangerous. So, yeah, he's certainly going to have a fabulous season. I think, look at City, I think Gabriel Jesus, if he stays fit, I think he's going to be outstanding this year. He's going to get so many chances. But he's the kind of striker that also creates a lot as well. So yeah, watch out for his performances over the coming months. I'm pretty excited to see him develop. He is a contender to become the next Premier League superstar. He's not there yet. He's a new boy. He could be a superstar in 12 months' time.
Mm. It's quite revealing. We were in International Week and we haven't even touched on England yet. But I want to highlight Marcus Rashford.
Hmm.
How do you see his season developing? He is. You can see him progressing quite markedly.
Hmm.
Is he going to be the real deal?
Eventually, I think he can be. I think it's a really good challenge for him in that there's a very expensively recruited Anthony Martial. And funnily enough, you can see when Rashford made a couple of mistakes, actually thought, I turn out Jose Mourinho will leave him out for the next game and he'll start with Martial. And he did at the weekend. And Rashford came on and, of course, scored as a substitute. Mm. And I think knowing the way Mourinho uses that. And I don't think there's any tension between them, no. But that selection...
They'll push
tension,
each other, won't
yeah,
they?
That yeah, it's going to... And one of them will emerge. Now, Rashford is clearly, and I say, the favourite to emerge in that, but he's got to be aware there's no automatic place in that. The setup they've got now with that their midfield, you know, that the anchors they've got in there, it is tailor-made for the front three to make hay with that.
Big time, you know. Yeah,
I was speaking to Paul Clement last week, and he made the point of what he learned from Jose Mourinho was the intensity of the pressure that he applied on everyone around him, that they have to produce.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes that creates an unhappy, sort of hostile environment inside the dressing room. We've seen flare-ups, haven't we? In Jose Mourinho dressing rooms, there have been problems in recent years. It was only about 12 months ago that a lot of people were saying, oh, can he handle the modern player, Jose Mourinho? I think the bottom line is, yeah, he can. And that dressing rooms actually do thrive on competition. And they need an iron fist at times. They need to know that if they're not delivering, they will lose their place. And I don't think any United player will consider their place a guarantee. Not even Romelu Lukaku now, especially with Zlatan Ibrahimovic signed up for the rest of this season. So they're in that environment, I do believe that as long as you've got a strength of character, and you should have if you're a top-flight professional player, then you will improve with that competition. I think Rashford's going to have a great year. I think he's got the potential to be the best, the young player of the year for sure. But I want to see him at centre-forward. He's not a left-winger. He's being crowbarred into that position because he's talented. He's a striker, and I'd love to see him there. And until we see him there on a regular basis, I'm afraid England are going to suffer because they're not going to see they're not going to have the very best of him in his best position.
Mm. Now, chaps, I've got a confession to make. The standard of questions is now going to improve. there's a new section we're trying out is questions from the listeners and the viewers. Got Janet from Manchester. She's asking for our views on the Bournemouth situation at the weekend. What did you think about the stewarding?
In the sense of Aguero and the arrest...
And the over-aggressive nature of it, yeah.
I was astonished by it in the sense that you knew it was within the context of the game, the 97th minute winner. You knew they were celebrating. It wasn't a pitch invasion as a protest to anything. You know, it was happy, joyful fans. Yes, players are instructed, you're not meant to run towards them or engage. Mm. But there was this moment of great glory, triumph and whatever, so they did. But the actual reaction was way over the top. Weirdly, Mike, and this was shown to me in the office with people going in, zooming in on the luminous jackets and things, I was amazed to see that certainly a number of the police officers in front of the City fans there were from Greater Manchester Police. So whether it's a jolly for the boys at the Bank Holiday weekend down to Dorset, I don't know. But there certainly seemed to be a degree of these were Manchester Police policing Manchester fans. Mm. And I've got to say that, and I'm pleased to say that the club Bournemouth had sense in sorting out the steward to apologise to Aguero or withdraw. Sorry, he didn't apologise. He withdrew the allegation that he'd been punched, which clearly he hadn't been.
Because you cannot go up. In any business, you cannot criminalise your customers, which is what is happening here.
No, I guess so. Yeah,
it's completely out of order.
Yeah, I think so. And I think if you run and celebrate with your own supporters, I don't think that should be a cautionable offence either. I think Mike Dean.
What goes right? You play yourself.
Yeah.
Were you ever in that situation?
Well, not in the Premier League, unfortunately, but I scored a few goals. Yeah. And goals that matter.
What's the thought process? Do you have any thought process?
Not really. You just want to celebrate. You want to celebrate with the supporters, especially when you're away from home. You've got a select group of fans who have come a long way, have paid their money, and you want to have a bit of fun and celebrate with them. In the moment of glory, you don't really think straight. Of course you don't. You just charge off towards them. I think it's a nonsense rule, really, in terms of getting caution for that. I think if you goad opposition fans,
correct.
I think that is a yellow card offence. But if you run towards your own ones, come on.
I mean, the thing is, the incitement is clearly there, be it with opposing players or with supporters. You've got to stamp it out. And this is where you need the referees to have a bit of common sense. And I don't just mean Mike Dean at the weekend has been given a bit, he has to do it. But the referees as a group should be saying to the Premier League, hang on, this is crazy, you know, because we're taking something out of the game where fans are part of that enjoyment.
The supporters, those supporters when Sterling were running towards them, that is the highlight of their season, potentially. It's highlight of the month, for sure, in terms of he wants to come and celebrate with us. That's what being a fan is all about, sharing that, feeling close to the players.
He's
and
probably
your team.
Saying goodbye, by the way. Yeah. Robert Whelan, yes. 7 clean sheets in their last 9 Premier League games. Is Liverpool's defence really that horrendous?
Well, those stats would suggest not, but when you see them on the days when they let goals in, you actually have to blink and think, did I really see the sort of goal they can concede? Mm. But as I say, it's a work in progress and they appear to be getting better. But there is a balance. Compared with where they were 2 years ago, they are getting better.
And Robert asks as a follow-up, can you ask Adrian what he thinks of Liverpool's season?
Well, towards that defence, I would say they're protective very well. They defend from front to back, Liverpool. I think individually, yes, they can improve. OK, it's not horrendous back four, but you can't tell me that Dejan Lovren and Alberto Moreno are good enough, or Simon Mignolet are good enough to be Liverpool's first-choice players. They can upgrade, they can get better. And I think Liverpool fans should expect better than those individuals. What I think of Liverpool season, they're contenders for a top three finish. They won't win the title because of that defence. They let in too many goals. And I know that record, that 7-9 is a good stat, but I don't have faith that they'll keep that up.
Right. We've got Jonathan Allen across the city. Hmm. Can Everton's poor display at Stamford Bridge be put down to fatigue or Koeman's, what he says, ridiculous decision to play three at the back?
Yes, it can be put down to fatigue. And for me, if there was a predictable result at the weekend, and I don't say it was 2-0, but if you thought...
I did predict it. I wrote a preview and predicted it. So.
You've got the trip to Manchester, which was a big game for them. They're playing at Manchester City on the Monday night. They've got a very challenging trip to Croatia to play on the Thursday night with the travelling involved and a very hostile atmosphere that you're playing in and you get through. And then on the Friday, you're on the road again and you're playing at Chelsea. And I just think they've not got a big enough squad to deal with all those eventualities. Clearly, and Ronald Koeman has said it, he still wants, within his sort of senior first-team group, a left-sided defender who could either play as a centre-back or a left-back, and he wants a strong target man. Now,
Robert's come on another Everton fan. He said, will all their good work in the transfer market be undone if they don't buy a top-end striker to replace
it? It won't be undone, but it feels like it's an unfinished masterpiece,
if
you know what I mean.
It's work in progress, though. Yeah. It is. And let's be honest, I mean, I appreciate Everton fans feeling this way, but if anybody's flagged it up in the summer to the recruitment, Ronald Koeman said, this is what we need. Now, the fact is, Arsenal wouldn't sell him Olivier Giroud. Mm. They can't get Dzeko out of Roma, which they've tried to do. They've had a look at Benteke and I think thought, he's not for us. But they are casting around, looking for a powerful alternative and a big fella to play.
They need a striker. I would go for someone that can stretch defences in behind. I think they miss the running power of Lukaku more than anything else. Got a lot of attacking midfielders now that can join in. But I'd like to see someone that can stretch. On Koeman, I think Koeman's a very good coach. My one criticism of him would be that I think he's a little bit fiddly. And by that, I mean, I don't think you can resist sometimes flipping formations around and worrying sometimes too much about the opposition. I think to build Everton, he should maybe focus a little less on the opposition and more on what he wants to achieve.
So, David, a question from Stu, the red half of Manchester. Can you see United signing that elusive fourth player that Mourinho talks about?
I'm not sure I can this week, Mike, but I've got to say, looking at what they've got and the way Jose Mourinho set that team up, I don't think it's going to matter that he doesn't get it, because I believe Matic particularly will prove to be one of the key signings of the season, especially with what the arrival of Matic as the holding man and probably as good as you're going to get in the Premier League, what we're then seeing from people like Paul Pogba, who are allowed to bomb on and do more. So I have a feeling that Manchester United are going to have a very successful season. And if they don't quite get what Jose wants, I don't think they need to despair.
Yeah, the missing link in the jigsaw is that it's a left footer, a left back or a left winger. Just adds a bit more balance to the side. I love what Valencia produces down the right-hand side. And I think ideally you'd like a carbon copy of him to fly down the left. But look, if they're not around in this window, I don't think it's a disaster.
The other one is, give Luke Shaw a chance when he's fully fit. Will he finally deliver? They spent an awful lot of money on him.
OK. We'll end with two questions from Spurs fans, Sam and Simon Walker. Sam asks, can or could Wembley cost Tottenham a top-four place?
Yes, Wembley could cost them because look at the track record of what they're doing when they play at Wembley, and clearly they've got a problem there, be it in delivering their best football on the pitch there, in the size of the ground, whatever. And also, I do think Wembley inspires opponents to up their game when they play. It's different to being at White Hart Lane.
Yeah, and Simon makes the point that over the last three seasons, they've had poor starts, Spurs. Is that because of this mania for doing their business at the business end of the window?
No, I wouldn't use that as an excuse. Not this year. I actually think the fact that they've got continuity in their squad would maybe give them an advantage over certain teams that have spent big, like an Everton, although Everton have played a lot more games because of the Europa League. No, I don't think you should use that as an excuse. I think Wembley will cost some points, but if they're to finish outside the top four, I wouldn't solely blame Wembley. I'd blame the squad size, something that needs to desperately be addressed.
Do you think there's two things that are linked together here? Tottenham make a slow start and Harry Kane doesn't score in August. I think if Harry got a few goals in August, it might just change the way they start a season.
Well, that's as may be. It's going to be a mad, mad week. Now, I know Liverpool say it's out of the question, but Philippe Coutinho will end this week in Barcelona. Thanks for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.